any day now. I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Skip to the End podcast. It's a bit of an Oscars special today, because later on in the show we're going to be discussing our final predictions for the Oscars, which are coming up next week. And also we've got a topic that's related to the Oscars. Do you want to tell them about it, Adam?
Yes, it's the best performances that should have been nominated for Oscars that weren't, but you also have to replace someone from that year.
Nice. And also our review is Oscars related. Do you want to tell them about that, Mark?
It is Inherent Vice, which I think we're all pretty excited about talking about.
Indeed, and that was nominated for 2 Oscars. And then our rewatch is The Crow, which wasn't nominated for any Oscars, but did win an MTV Movie Award for Best Song. So
there you go.
So it's around
the same. It's the same. So let's get started.
Somebody wear me to the
face.
Will a lady pin me in her hair?
So the topic set for this week, boys, was best performances that weren't nominated for Oscars, that potentially should have been.
Yeah.
And you have to replace someone from the category of that year. So we'll throw it across to Mark first. Who have you got for number one?
Well, in 2001, and this is going to upset you a little bit, I won't lie.
I assume all of these
I'm going to remove the movie that she was nominated, which was Erin Brockovich, which obviously you're in as Danny DeVito. The reason I want to remove it is that, for me, the person that should have been in, or the film, was Almost Famous.
Was that not nominated for Best Picture?
No, so it was. It was up for Best Lead Actress, which was...
Kate Hudson.
Yep, thank you. And I think it also did actually win the Screenplay Award. But it didn't get nominated for Best Film, which for me is criminal.
I agree. In researching this topic myself this week, I've realised there are quite a lot of films that seem to win Best Screenplay, either original or adapted, that should have won in other categories as well.
Mm.
And it's just a really odd theme that seems to happen with this.
I think sometimes they use it as sort of a consolation prize. Mm. We don't quite love your movie enough to nominate it for Best Picture, but we'll throw you a bone of Best Screenplay.
Yeah, look what you could have won.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, I'm not going to bore people again because, you know, on our website and our first episode, I've talked about this film to death. But it's an outstanding film and it really, for me, is Cameron Crowe's finest piece of work. It's in my top 5 films of all time. And there's no way that this deserves to be left out. And, you know, I'm not faulting the film Erin Brockovich, but it's chalk and cheese and... I definitely think this deserves to be there.
Well, it's one of my most famous films, as Danny DeVito.
Yeah, sorry about that, mate.
In case you guys didn't know, this is actually a bit of a running theme.
Yeah.
When we had our first flyers printed for Skip to the End, the artist took a picture of me and made me look incredibly like Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Short and bald.
Basically, and I'm not short and bald.
You're just short.
So, yeah, sorry to insult your work, but, yeah, that's my first choice. Over to you, mister.
Again, much like you, I'm going to now talk about a film and performance that I've harped on about on the podcast before. You guys know how much I love the film Copland. I think it's a massively underrated, under-the-radar film. And I think Sylvester Stallone's performance in that is something special. It's undoubtedly, for me, his best performance. And if I say that, then he should have been nominated because he was nominated for Rocky.
Yeah.
So if you're nominated for Rocky, then you should be nominated for this. That was in 1998. The person I think he should replace was Peter Fonda in Yuli's Gold, only because I haven't seen it and it sounds shit.
I was just about to say, if you can start talking to me about that movie, fair play, because I've never even heard of it.
I know nothing about it. I saw the front cover of the DVD case, I was like, it's not for me.
Could be a masterpiece.
It could be. Doubt it.
Yeah.
Is it one of them that's popped up on many lists over the years, Yuli's Gold?
Well, I'm not going to spoil it, but the rewatch this week...
This is a really odd, again, another odd theme, because I've noticed that as well. There's a lot of films on there that seem to get nominated within that year. Everyone raves about it, but then when it comes down to it, everyone's top 150 never includes any of these films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. It's just, at the time, everyone was saying how great it was, But then, naturally, it just doesn't stand the test of time.
It doesn't stand the test of time, and that's the thing. If it's a great performance in a forgettable film, you will eventually forget the performance. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that's what the case is with, with Yuli's Gold.
Poor Yuli's Gold. Sorry, Yuli's. We'll come back to you one day in an episode and give you the time you deserve.
Yeah. Go on, Adam.
Okay, my first one's actually from 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a film that, to be honest, I didn't mind as a remake. I tend to be against remakes. But it's actually Halle Steinfeld from True Grit.
Okay.
And I think she should be removed from that category and replaced by Mila Kunis in Black Swan.
Yep.
Because I think Mila Kunis puts in an absolutely unbelievable performance in Black Swan.
Yeah.
And arguably her best work.
I would say undoubtedly her best work for me.
Yeah. I really like her. This is not to say this, but I really like her in Friends with Benefits. Just because you see
you
pretty much her naked.
Let's look at that.
Yeah. But no, she is outstanding in that film.
Yeah. Look, I'm a bit torn though, because I think Hayley Steinfeld's great in True Grit
as
well.
I think she's good. I have a thing about people getting nominations when they've only been around for 2 years.
You got to earn that nomination.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need to earn what you're given.
Is that why Meryl Streep gets nominated for everything?
Pretty much,
she's been around forever.
She's been around forever.
Yeah.
And she looks it into the woods as well.
That's on purpose. That's the makeup.
No, they wanted to save budget and just get a really like wrinkly old face and just think, oh, I'll save some money there.
That's what she looks like when she gets up in the morning.
Saves 3 hours on makeup.
That's it. Ready to go.
Are we on sexism now?
Nah,
nah.
Cool.
We're fine.
It's fine when it's there.
So that's my first one.
Brilliant. Over to me. A bit more recent than 2001. So in 2005, Terrence Howard from Hustle and Flow was nominated for the Best Actor.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I don't think it's a great performance. I have seen the film. I never rated him in... what's the film that everyone went crazy for? That year.
Oh, Crash.
Crash. And I never rated that. I always thought it was very overrated.
It is.
And for me, I've never really seen this performance from him that's Oscar-worthy. So I'm taking him out, and I'm replacing him with Paul Giamatti from Sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Sideways, actually, you'll take the mick here, did earn an Oscar nomination for the supporting actor. And do you know who that was?
Thomas Hayden Church,
a.k.a.
Sandman.
Yeah. Now... Sideways is a beautifully made movie, and Empire actually gave it their film of the year that year and shocked everyone because it was up against every big blockbuster. It's a really well made film. It is only about two guys just before one goes and gets married, goes to California, I think, to go drinking on the vineyards, and it's about life really, and it's a bit pretentious, but it's an amazing made film. And for me, Paul Giamatti, it's his moment, and he steals that whole film and he carries it for the whole 2 hours. He shows every emotion a man can go through, and for me, he should have been up there.
So you wouldn't say that despite obtaining the Best Supporting Actor nomination, Thomas Hayden Church outshone?
It's a difficult one for me, but I'm going to say that he was beaten on the day by good old Paul.
And I agree with what you say about what's the fella's name you've replaced again?
Sorry, Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. I've never rated him in anything. I just think he mumbles. He doesn't enunciate
anything
we see him, and he's just mumbling. That's why they got rid of him after the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
Because he was a shit roadie. He just sat there mumbling. Get cheedling. Bonus.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Good.
But again, that's another example of the same with Crash, really. It's a film that hasn't stood the test of time.
Well, no, I think the year that Crash won the Oscar was the year of Brokeback Mountain. Yeah. And there's, you know, uproar still to this day that Crash won, which was a terrible, threadbare, thin piece of work about racism that was so badly done.
Yeah.
I have no idea, still to this day, why it even was in the nominations. I've watched it. It was all right. But my lord, if you looked at all the films that have took the Best Picture, well, it doesn't go anywhere near them. It's dreadful.
No, it is.
Shame.
Fair enough. Ben, then, number two.
Well, my next one, again, another actor and performance I've banged on about many, many times. 2007... I am still confused as to why Leonardo DiCaprio was not nominated for The Departed. For me, it's his best performance. I've said this before, the coiled intensity of him reminds me of a young De Niro, reminds me of sort of Taxi Driver. And again, a scene I've spoken about before is there's a scene where he's with his therapist and he looks ready to just explode with emotion. And it's a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. And the person I want to replace him with is Leonardo DiCaprio for Blood Diamond.
Yeah.
Because... a perfectly good performance. Leo's my favourite working actor. Yeah. I think he's the king, and he's great in Blood Diamond. But of those two films, The Departed is so much better, such a better performance, that it was bizarre to me that Blood Diamond got the nod.
Well, I've always kind of thought it's slightly odd that you get nominated for a performance as a best supporting actor.
Mm.
Surely if you've done two or three films in which you've been a supporting actor, they've all been good.
Yeah.
You should just be considered on the work for that year.
And that does happen in other award ceremonies. I think the main ones, like the Oscars and the Emmys and so on, tend to
just
compartmentalise everything.
Yeah.
But some of the smaller ones, like the Critics Awards, like the New York Film Critics or whatever, if you've been in three good films, like for example, the last year, the McConaissance, people were putting Matthew McConaughey films in one lump and saying he's done this, that, and the other, so we should reward him for all of his work, not one particular role. So maybe it's something the Oscars should look to do.
It maybe should. I mean, I understand the Golden Globes doing it because they have best actor in a drama and best actor in a comedy.
Yeah.
So if you've done two performances in a drama and a comedy, you should be nominated for both.
And I think that has happened.
But not considered for both based on the work you've done. So only a work in drama, only a work in comedy can be considered in either or. But for the Oscars, which is best lead actor, it shouldn't be based on one performance.
Yeah.
If you've starred in three or four films that year, you've been brilliant in all of them, you should be the front runner.
You should, because sometimes there have been instances where people have been nominated for two different performances in one category, and then the problem is then you have vote splitting. You'll have people who liked your work, half will vote for one film, half will vote for the other, and then you'll lose to someone in the middle.
I can't remember the name of the guy. Someone's been nominated for, is it the best score this year, who's got two nominations?
Oh, right, okay.
Films.
Yeah.
And it's just going to split the vote.
It might be Dave Platt, is it?
I think it might be, actually, yeah. It's going to split the vote for him.
Yeah.
Giving him less chance of actually winning.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
So, my number two, and the person I'm taking out is Rooney Mara, the girl with the dragon tattoo, in 2012, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
Now, for me, the girl with the dragon tattoo was one of the most abysmal pieces of shit I've ever seen. It's not a patch on the Scandinavian ones that were done. Which makes me sound really pretentious, like a Starbucks wanker. but she, although she is good at what she does, you should not be rewarded for being good in an abysmal film.
No.
Because you're made to look better by everyone around you.
Yeah. Dwayne Johnson would have about 15 nominations. Exactly. That was the criteria.
So I want to take her out and replace her with Tilda Swinton in We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Good choice.
Very nice.
Good choice.
We Need to Talk About Kevin is one of the most, I guess, confusing, horrible pieces of work I've seen, but in a good way.
Yeah.
It really does kind of hit home when Ezra Miller just puts a fantastic performance in as well.
It does.
But Tilda Swinton just steals the show completely. So I just think that she should have been nominated. And how she wasn't, I'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a bit of, I guess, critical uproar in Hollywood because a lot of people liked the film, a lot of people didn't. Just because of the subject matter. They basically said that it was a bad seed child sort of film. And it wasn't. It was a film about sociopathic autism, basically.
Mm.
I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. It's not one of those films you watch again and again.
No, not at all.
But I loved it. I thought the way it was made was brilliant. I thought everyone in it was outstanding. And yeah, you've nailed it. The performances were... They stayed with you for ages. That key, I know we're not praising the Kevin in this, but my God, he was harrowing.
This is the thing that gets me, because Tilda Swinton puts in an amazing performance. John C. Reilly puts in an amazing performance.
That's exactly what I was
Ezra Miller
saying,
puts in an amazing performance. So to stand out amongst three great performances, you should be nominated. You deserve something from that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was overlooked criminally.
Yeah, and I mean, I say she was overlooked again this year. She should have been nominated for Snowpiercer.
Yes, yeah.
So good in that.
Massive shame.
So that's my number two.
Cool.
So number one time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go with the obvious. I'm going to surprise you because I think I could put money on it now. We're all going to agree. So I'm going to go for 2012. Again, it's going to be a movie and it's one I want to...
Well, I hope it's a movie.
...tear into. It could be an actor performance. It could be an actress. But yeah, I'm removing the Tree of Life.
Good.
Good.
Wank.
It annoys me. It shouldn't be anywhere near the nominations. It should be on the... Skippy Awards. If we had 2012 Skippy Awards, it would be front runner.
If you don't know what the Skippy Awards are, listen to the last episode, yeah?
Yeah.
You can find that on skip10.co.uk.
Skip10.co.uk, skip10.podomatic.com, or iTunes.
So. Yeah. Or Podomatic.
Options.
So my replacement is going to be by, Adam, your film, The Dark Knight.
Yeah, of course it should have been nominated.
You know, I know they don't go with the whole comic book movies or the big blockbusters, but you can't go and hand an award to one of the kings of acting in that film. We don't need to bore people with Heath Ledger's performance in that film, but how can you recognise that much of the film and not the actual film itself? That film was a masterpiece. I'm not going to say it's unbelievable, because I get picked on about that, and I say it far too much, but it is a masterpiece. It's Christopher Nolan's finest work. Give the guy some credit, you know, he deserved this, and everyone involved in that movie. I'm sorry, but that should have been a movie. Don't say it should have won, but it definitely should have got a nod.
And that's, I think it was the year after that they changed the rules so there wasn't 5 nominees anymore. They opened it up so there could be as many as 10, purely so that films like that actually get recognised rather than just a highbrow stuff.
Yeah, it's odd when you have a situation where you've got a best supporting actor that actually wins, but his film isn't in Best Picture.
Yeah,
And like you said, that's why they changed the rule on that. But I mean, I can talk about The Dark Knight to the end of the day, basically. I love The Dark Knight. I've mentioned this on several podcasts before, so I'm not going to bore everyone by talking about it now.
Yeah.
But if you haven't watched it, watch it. It's unbelievable. It'll blow your mind.
If you haven't watched it, let us know why, because I'm sure most people in the world have seen it, unless you're like living in a mud hut in Africa or something. But, you know, there's no excuse.
They haven't got
Netflix. They haven't got Wi-Fi. It's only 3G. But, yeah.
Well, my one, I have gone for the obvious one, because I couldn't not. So my pick is from 2014. How the hell Joaquin Phoenix wasn't nominated for his lead role in Her is beyond me. It's the best performance of his career. It's the best performance of most people's careers. It's one of the best performances I've seen. He carries that movie. He's in every scene. It's a heartbreaking performance. It's moving. It's beautiful. It's everything you would want. And the fact that he was snubbed disturbs me. And I don't think it was to do with the quality of the performance. I think it was after that whole thing where...
Oh, he criticised award ceremonies.
Well, because he pretended to be mental, didn't he? He grew his hair and his beard out, pretended that he was starting a rap career, and it was all for a documentary. It was a piss take. And I think because of that, because he denigrated awards, the Oscars, the Academy went, oh, well, fuck him. We're not going to nominate him then. Which is a shame, because he deserved it more than anyone else.
He did get the nod for The Master.
He did.
2012.
And that's a good point, actually, yeah.
So why... I don't understand why he wasn't nominated for Her.
Oh, I don't know, then. I'm more confused then, because that was the one reason I had was the only thing I could think of, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't believe it either. I just think, if you watch Her, you realise how good this guy is.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about him a bit later anyway, because we've watched Inherent Vice to review, so you know, he's the lead actor in that, and we'll talk about his acting ability a bit more later.
Absolutely, yeah.
But Her is just a masterpiece of a film, and he carries the whole thing.
It does. And the person that I'm going to replace is... Chiwetel Ejiofor for 12 Years a Slave, because I didn't love that movie. I thought it was massively overrated, and frankly, I thought that Chiwetel Ejiofor was better in Serenity.
Yeah. I've not actually seen 12 Years a Slave. It just doesn't interest me. I just don't ever think I really want to see it. It just looks one of those films that's made to win an Oscar. Too long. Not interested.
I have seen 12 Years a Slave, and I didn't think it was a bad film.
Boring.
The thing that just really got me was the fact that Brad Pitt was an executive producer on it, and he plays like the one good white guy in it.
Oh, the heroic white guy, yeah.
Yeah.
And that just annoys me.
Yeah.
He's just stroking his own cock.
Yeah, fair enough.
Metaphorically.
Yeah, metaphorically.
That was done after the film.
Fassbender was brilliant in it. Like, I'll give you that. Fassbender was great. Cumberbatch was quite good in it as well.
Cumberbatch was good in it. Again, he plays... the nice slave owner.
Yeah.
Which is just a complete ludicrous notion.
Yeah. Okay. No, didn't like that film. Didn't care for it.
Have you gone something different for your number one?
I've gone this year.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've took out Bradley Cooper for American Sniper.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. If you don't know, skip to the end's thoughts on American Sniper. Ben's done a nice review that we pretty much all agree with. So visit skiptotheend.co.uk. But, yeah, I'm replacing him with Miles Teller from Whiplash.
Yeah.
Now, I reviewed Whiplash on our last episode, so if you've not heard it, take a listen. But Miles Teller, I mean, J.K. Simmons, fair play, you know, he deserves every bit of credit he gets for what he does in Whiplash. But so does Miles Teller. I mean, that kid is amazing in that film.
He is.
And it's not his fault that he is outdone by J.K. Simmons, but still recognise the fact that this kid is... held his own, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's kind of inspired. I think it inspires Simmons to that performance.
Yeah.
I think if Teller hadn't been so good opposite him, you wouldn't have got that. There is an intensity between the two that you will never see replicated.
Yeah, it's a duet, that film. It's a duet between the two of them. One couldn't be how they are without the other.
Exactly.
And Teller was superb, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. He should have been nominated over Cooper.
So if you nominate one, you nominate the other.
Yeah.
That's the way it has to be for me.
Yeah.
He's been pretty cool about it. I've been reading his Twitter, and he's really like, oh, great, everyone's loving Whiplash. I didn't think it would do this well. JK deserves the credit he's getting, but come on, don't be so modest, you know.
No, I agree. He's very much kind of a new kid on the scene, really. He's not been in acting that long, and I think he's probably been in for, what, about 10 years?
Yeah, if that,
Which isn't that long as far as an actor goes. I mean, Simmons has been in acting for a lot longer, and this is his first nomination, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So Teller's probably looking at it from the point of view of, if I can keep up this, I'll get there one day.
Oh, yeah. He absolutely will.
And if he does keep up that, then he'll probably win multiple.
I don't know if you guys have seen a film called Rabbit Hole that he starred with Nicole Kidman a few years ago. It's a really moving... It's a film where she's got a young kid and the kid runs out into the road and gets hit by a driver. Not the driver's fault, and the driver turns out it's Miles Teller's character, and at the point he was only something like 17 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it's about how they form a bond. The
mother
of the dead kid. Yeah, and it's a brilliant film and an amazing performance from him. He'll win Oscars later on in his career, no doubt.
I hope so. Starting with Reed Richards.
Yeah, fantastic for Oscar-winning film.
So that's we've not all agreed on the number one.
Well, I'm glad for that. I'm glad that I was the only one who went for the obvious.
Yeah, lazy. Well, that's it.
I think that's a good topic, though, guys. What have we got for next week?
Well, it was a very good topic, Adam. It was your choice, so good on you. What I wanted to do is do something slightly different. We're always doing our top three, so I kind of want to do a bottom three. We'll still call it a top three. But it is. It's a worst rather than a best.
Okay.
So next time round, I want you to come to the podcast armed with your three worst films that are from video games.
Wow.
There's a hell of a lot out there. Just three, yeah. I know. It's a long list. You know, this topic was difficult to narrow down, but that one, because pretty much every film that's made from a video game is garbage. But what are the worst three in your eyes?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. That's a bit of a...
Trying to break that down to three is tough.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a passion of mine, that one.
You are a big gamer.
I have a lot of hate for video game films.
As do we all, I think. So we'll do that next time then, boys.
Awesome. Challenge accepted.
This week we've been to see the new comedy crime drama Inherent Vice, written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, based on the novel by Thomas Pynchon, and starring the great Joaquin Phoenix as Doc Sportello. And, wow. Let's get into this. Adam.
I still don't know what it's about.
Me neither.
I spent what appeared to be 10 hours watching the film.
Mm.
It was a really odd... It was so 70s.
Yeah. Well, it was set in the 70s.
It was the most 70s film I've ever seen. It was flares and sideburns with long hair, drugs and orgies and prostitutes and...
Big hairy minges.
Yeah.
Sorry, possibly. Muff.
Oh, dear God.
Phoenix's mutton chop sideburns were unreal, though.
They were.
Yeah. I think he'd have grown a pair of them.
It's really difficult to talk about from start to finish. When we get introduced to Doc Sportello, I think his ex-girlfriend comes over.
Yeah, and he's a private detective.
He's a private detective. His ex-girlfriend comes over, but he's also this huge stoner who takes, well, everything pretty much. He's, coke, heroin, he pretty much does everything.
Yeah.
But he's, tasked with trying to find... Michael Wolfman, who's his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend.
Yeah.
And they're trying to have... His family or partners are trying to have him committed.
Yeah.
And I just... I've never been so confused by a film.
Ditto. Mark, tell us that we're wrong here. Did you
understand
what the hell
was going on? I can't believe
you
guys didn't understand it. Come on, guys. It's just one guy looking for his ex. Done.
That isn't what happened.
It was, I started to understand it, and I'd be like, okay, so he's off, he's looking for her, and then it would just go off on this tangent and just be a bit random. And I know the director's very famous for that, and I understand that it's a bit quirky, it's a bit weird, it's not like in the way that, who's the guy that did Grand Budapest Hotel? It's not that kind of, just trying to be different to be like that. No, he's not it's not something like a bloke with a fox on his head walking past, but there's the... There's just no sense in it. And, you know, before we all went to see this, I read a lot of reviews of people saying, don't try and understand it, just go in and watch this film. But I want to try and understand it, because I just paid money to see this film, and I want to be kind of rewarded with, this is a story, this is what happens, this is the end, go away. And I was left going, that story should not have been 2.5 hours.
No.
And I don't know how it dragged out and kept going on and on and on, because it should have been just a 20-minute scene.
Can I just try and surmise the film a bit?
Go on.
Go for it.
Right.
You can.
So Johnny Cash is now a private detective.
Yeah.
And he's gone off to try and look for Sal Moroni from The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gone off to try and look for him, and every so often Old Boy turns up as a policeman.
Yeah.
So Old Boy's there, and we've also got Johnny Cash, who's now estranged from his wife, June Carter.
Who's now, she's a DA now.
He's a DA, yeah. And they're looking for the guy from Marley and Me. As well, he turns up sometimes.
That makes more sense than the film did.
So, there was just no singing in this.
Which was awful. That's Johnny what it was Cash. Missing. Yeah. It was missing the song.
It's missing from this Johnny Cash biopic.
The problem with it was, the initial thing, as you described, Adam, was Doc Sportello has a private eye, his ex-girlfriend comes and says, my new boyfriend's missing, I think he might have been committed by his wife. And if that's the plot, if that's everything spans from there, that's fine. But every 2 minutes, it seems that he gets a new case.
Yeah.
Like, he then comes across some woman whose husband is apparently dead, but she doesn't believe he's dead, so he's got that case. Then there's the case of the Golden Fang, which 1 minute is a boat, the next minute it's an organisation run by dentists. I didn't know what the frig was going on.
Smuggling heroin?
Probably. I kept losing the thread. I didn't know what was happening. Afterwards, I went and read the plot line on Wikipedia. Still didn't get it. I was like, what's just happened there?
I know exactly what you mean. I felt the same way. I actually looked it up on Wikipedia as well. And I was reading through it. I was like, I don't even remember that happening.
At least we're talking and trying to... Yeah. At least no one's turned up today going, God, that story is amazing. I can't believe how easy it was to summarise. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Like, I'm one of these people who gets pissed off. If people say, oh, Inception, it's rubbish. You can't even understand it. I get angry at that. It's like, if you use your brain, you wouldn't understand it.
Yeah.
But this, I don't understand what happened at all.
So you're angry by the fact that, you know, people say, oh, you should understand this. There's not going to be anyone out there that can say this to you, Ben, because if they do understand it, wow.
They're a liar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to need to come on... You can be a special guest on this podcast and explain... Yeah. No, if we're not letting you in, if you understand, you're a weirdo.
And the thing is, like, I don't mind a film that's a bit out there and a bit quirky. Like, as we discussed before, Paul Thomas Anderson is my favourite director, and Magnolia, for me, is his magnum opus, which are these different scenarios, different people, different vignettes, and it doesn't really come together, it doesn't really coalesce into anything, it's just a fascinating film. But this is, I think it tries to be along those lines, and it just doesn't work for me.
But focused around one central character, like you say, he keeps getting new cases.
Yeah.
As the thing goes along, like, and they all seem to try and interlink with each other, but it just seems to start falling apart.
One thing I read today, obviously, is that this is Paul Thomas Anderson's first comedy in years.
Was it a comedy?
And it does still go down as a crime sort of comedy. There is the kind of fun element of the film. And it's not faulting the film, it's not even faulting his work, but perhaps he should just stick to the other sort of genres out there, because he's a lot better at it, because... There was this, and what was the Punch Drunk Love?
But I like that film. I think that's a really good film.
So in my opinion, Punch Drunk Love is his weakest film, in my opinion. And it might just be because Adam Sandler's in it. I can't take him seriously.
Oh, you mean Skippy Award winner?
Yeah.
Or was he just Skippy Award nominee?
No, he won.
He won.
Yeah,
good on
him. He did win.
Thought he deserved.
He texted the other day, actually, saying he's put it on the mantelpiece next to his Oscar.
Nice. An Oscar that he would never win.
Yeah. So this film, I'm going to find the good things about it. I love the soundtrack. There's some really good tunes on there that was
cool.
Fantastic.
No, I agree with that. I think the soundtrack was very cool. For me, Joaquin Phoenix again.
Yeah.
For me, put in a good performance.
He's brilliant, but the one issue I did have with him, and I think it leads into the fact that I didn't understand the film, is that he, in a very Terrence Howard style, mumbled through the whole damn thing.
Yeah,
and there were points where I didn't have a clue what he'd said, let alone what he meant.
Too much mumbling in this world.
Shame.
There's far too much. This is the mumbling episode. Don't you agree, boys?
Yeah, I do.
But yeah, I loved him. I can't fault him. I don't think he could do a bad film anymore. I don't think he's capable of it. He could go in a Star Wars film with a script by George Lucas and still deliver.
No.
He could. I think he's
well,
that good.
Natalie Portman couldn't.
It's impossible.
He's in a weird way now. That'll be announced next month. But, oh, Jesus Christ.
I thought Josh Brolin was great as Bigfoot Bjornsson, a cop slash aspiring actor. It was a very, very odd role.
I wanted to see more of him. I didn't think he was in it. Him and Owen Wilson weren't in it as much. Considering the trailer played out that, oh, they're going to be massive parts in this, they weren't in it long.
No, same with Reese Witherspoon. Her two scenes as D.A. Penny Kimball, that was it. You know, I think she filmed them in 4 days or something.
It was really odd for people just cropping up every now and then.
Yeah.
Benicio Del Toro, as his lawyer as well, was in about two or three scenes.
But it's a very odd film to try and talk about, because when the plot is all over the place, as this was, you just kind of sit there thinking, I need to try and pick something good out of this, because without an overriding narrative, it's very difficult to rate this film.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I was looking for things that I liked, and I think the thing I found was, because I love Paul Thomas Anderson as a director, I thought the composition of some of the shots was great, and especially when he let the shots run long. There's a couple of really long scenes with a static shot. There's one where Doc Sportello, Phoenix, goes to meet Owen Wilson's character in, I think it's a nightclub or a bar, and they just sit and talk at a table, and the camera's just static on them, just a two-shot, for about 10 minutes. It's a really long scene, and it's brilliant. I like that, just letting the actors do their work.
Yeah.
So that I enjoyed.
I mean, I remember when you, obviously, Ben, brought The Master to the podcast as one of my homeworks, and I went away and, you really opened my eyes up to the work of Paul Thomas Anderson, and since, I loved Magnolia, but I've gone and visited a lot of his work. And I remember you saying to me he was one of your favourite directors ever. And I was like, wow. And you said to me, the reason for this is he has the ability to get a Oscar-winning performance out of all of his actors usually. You know, he's known for getting the best out of his actors. Mm. Do you feel genuinely in this film he hasn't quite had that kind of, it sounds cheesy, but had that Paul Thomas Anderson effect on his film? And I don't know, there just didn't seem to be that Oscar amazing memorising performance that he's got out of Philip Seymour Hoffman previously, that he's got out of Joaquin Phoenix, he's got even out of Tom Cruise,
Tom Cruise is a real Magnolia. And I think you're absolutely right, and I think the issue is because the story's not that great and the script wasn't particularly strong, despite the fact the script has been nominated for an Oscar, I didn't think the script was that interesting, so they had very little to work with. The only person who made the most of his lines and his scenes was Josh Brolin, but again, like we've said, he wasn't in it enough. I think if Josh Brolin would have had another 20 minutes of screen time, we'd have been talking about something really special.
I mean, I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to Paul Thomas Anderson. I've not seen as many films as you guys have. Does he usually work with an original screenplay or an adapted screenplay?
He a bit of both. You know, like There Will Be Blood, which is probably his most successful work, was an adapted.
Yeah.
That was based on a novel called Oil, I believe. Yeah. This is an adaptation of Thomas Pynchon's novel. But I think Magnolia was an original thing. I think Punch Drunk Love was probably original as well. So it's a bit of both.
So it's kind of a half and half situation.
Yeah.
He still creates good films out of adapted screenplays.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, There Will Be Blood is as good an adaptation of a book you will ever see. Although, by all accounts, he changed it quite a bit. But it's still an adaptation. It's brilliant.
But again, you've got Daniel Day-Lewis sitting there in that film just rocking it.
Yeah.
See, I would like to read the book now to see if he's made any major changes. I want to see if it can make a bit more sense, maybe reading it, because I can imagine that Paul Thomas Anderson did go about making this film. And let's be honest about it, one thing you can say about him is his detail in this film was, again, brilliant. Every scene looked beautiful.
Yeah.
There was a lot of thought gone into the set design. All the costumes looked brilliant. Like you said, it's the most 70s film you've seen, filmed in 2014. So he's done pretty well if he's beaten the films that are very, they're actually filmed in the 70s. But he had that kind of overall, I felt when I was watching it like I was on drugs at times. I wish I was, I might have made some sense. But, drugs are bad and you should never do drugs. But, Skip to the End, do not endorse drugs in any way.
You.
But
unless prescribed by a doctor.
Yeah. But
even then.
But it just had that kind of like hazy feel about it. There's a camera effect. I think it might just be a filter on there, but it looked a bit kind of like a stoner film. It had that kind of real weird kind of effect that was on the whole film throughout, and it did feel like You know, obviously you saw how much he was doing drugs in the film, and the amount of coke they were doing was ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, that was when he walked in the room and he was just about to leave, he just runs over the table and just starts shoving up his nose. Remember that?
Is that with the dentist?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, played by Martin Short. He's
so
very
good.
Dentist,
I love that scene, but
yeah.
You know.
It's what I mean about people just cropping up.
Yeah,
the small part.
Yeah,
film.
Martin Short was in that was in two scenes, and then he was dead. You didn't even see him die. You just hear that he died in a trampoline accident.
Yep. But this is one of the weird things about it, because there's moments where Doc Sportillo blacks out in the film, and I thought I'd blacked out.
Mm.
I thought I'd literally passed out, completely missed everything, and something had happened. So I had to kind of go, "What happened there?"
Yeah, it was a very odd film. Just coming back to a point you made then, Mark, about the sort of haziness and the way it looked. I read something with Paul Thomas Anderson where he said one of the things he took inspiration for was the old Cheech and Chong movies. I can definitely see that inspiration in there. But going back to how faithful it was to the book, apparently the ending has changed a little bit. I've had the book for years and I've never got around to reading it. Apparently the ending's changed a little bit, but otherwise it's very faithful. Which makes me think that's going to be one trippy-ass book. So I am going to read that quite soon.
Maybe do...
What if it translates better on the page then?
Quite possibly. I really do wish I intended to read it before I saw the film, and I really wish I had now. But I'm going to read it soon.
It'll be interesting to see what you think.
Okay, so we've picked the good and the bad. Is it time for ratings?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. All I would say is the soundtrack was outstanding. He got some really good performances from his actors. I need to see it again. I'm looking forward to it coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, so I would like to sit and watch it in the comfort of my own home and just take some time.
Have a chance to rewind.
Yeah. Yeah. I just need a couple of days free.
I think I need to listen to it like through headphones so I can understand what Phoenix is saying half the time.
Do you know, with Joaquin Phoenix, he is now an actor that for some reason has to carry a two and a half hour film. He's in every scene. He carried that whole film. It's all about him. In Her, it's all about him. In Walk the Line, it's all him. I bet he just wants to be a supporting actor for 10 minutes in a film, you know. I bet he's sick to death of like, here's a script, you're gonna have to work on this film, give everything for a year. It must be annoying.
He strikes me as a guy who's dedicated to his craft.
Yeah.
So I don't think he really minds being the lead actor in a film.
It's not the worst problem to have, is it?
What's he doing next?
I mean, too many good films where I'm the star.
Yeah.
It sucks.
And not getting nominated for Oscars.
Yeah.
If you're listening, come on the show.
We'd love to talk to you, Joaquin.
Yeah, but not for 2.5 hours. It's not just you. We're going to be on it as well.
Yeah, you get 10 minutes, tops.
Ratings. This is going to be interesting because I've been trying to work this out all day.
I'm going to go 6. I think it was fine. I don't understand it. There was a lot to like about the direction. Some good performances. But I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. And it was especially disappointing because, as I've said, Paul Thomas Anderson's my favourite director. So, 6.
Okay. I'm going to go 1 less than you. Sort of bang in the middle for me in a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
There was nothing I overtly liked about it. There was nothing I disliked too much about it. I'm quite happy to throw in the middle and just go 5.
I'm going to agree with you, Ben. I don't want to give it a 5. I'm thinking it doesn't matter if I pick a 7, does it now? Because the maths have skipped here and make it a 6 anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to say a 7. And it makes no difference anyway. So it's a 6.
So you're giving it 7 overall,
yeah.
Skips the end score, 6 out of 10.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Now, usually we wait till the end of the show, to the outro, to announce our next film that we're going to review. But I think we need to get this out now. Mark, what are we reviewing on episode 15 of Skip to the End podcast?
Your choice.
Your choice.
I've persuaded these two to go with me to the cinema and watch probably the film that everyone in the world is going to be talking about. Rightly or wrongly, we're going to go and see 50 Shades of Grey.
Christ.
Every woman in the bingo world is going to be talking about...
Every hormonal old bag.
There'll be young girls going as well that read the book and enjoyed it.
Anyone
that's bought the book and had a flick, you know, would have enjoyed
the pages
this. Then, you know, we need to see this. We can't be podcasters and talk about movies and miss out the one that people are going to be talking about. So I think it will be an interesting topic.
That's fine, and I agree. But you seem to be forgetting that us three men of a certain age are going to be going to the cinema together to see 50 Shades of Grey.
Topless.
That's up to you. That's your call.
It could be worse. We could be going separate in trench coats.
So yeah, next episode, guys, 50 Shades of Grey.
Sunday, February 22nd, it will be the 87th Annual Academy Awards, a.k.a. the Oscars. And as we're a movies podcast, we've decided to do our final predictions for the big categories. We picked eight categories, the ones that we think are the most important. We're going to go through, we're going to give you each of our picks, a brief explanation as to why. Closer to the actual event, we will put these up on the website as well, so you can check that out if you wish. And then we'll run a bit of a competition and see who gets the most right. Mark won the nominees competition by
1 point.
He's shrugging, looking like it's standard behaviour for him. It was lucky guesses.
If you want film knowledge, I'm here, boys.
Yeah, right. So anyway.
Sandman?
Yeah, okay.
So we'll see how we go with our official predictions. So we're going to start off with Best Adapted Screenplay. And the nominees are American Sniper, written by Jason Hall. Imitation Game, written by Graham Moore. Inherent Vice, written by Paul Thomas Anderson. The Theory of Everything, written by Anthony McCarten. And Whiplash, written by Damien Chazelle. So, Adam, who is your pick for Best Adapted Screenplay and why?
Yeah, this was quite difficult. I wanted to go with Whiplash because I loved it.
Yep.
But I just think it's going to be The Imitation Game. I think we spoke previously during our nominees that should have been nominated thing.
Yeah.
And we said that this is very much the runner-up prize for the one that doesn't win the Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think The Imitation Game, it's a story about a war hero who was treated dreadfully just because of his sexuality. There's some fantastic performances. And the script is crafted in a fantastic way as well. And I just think it's going to get the nod this year.
Okay, Mark?
I've actually agreed. The Academy bloody love a film like that, don't they? It ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
I don't agree it should win, but I just got a very strong feeling. And Adam, everything you said, I agree.
Well, that makes three of us then. Exactly the same pick for the exact same reasons. So there we go.
Really boring competition if we've all chosen exactly the same things.
Yeah. Right, we'll soon find out. Then moving on to Best Original Screenplay. The nominees are Birdman, written by Alejandro González Iñárritu and three other chaps who I can't be bothered to name. Boyhood, written by Richard Linklater. Foxcatcher, by Emax Fry and Dan Futterman. The Grand Budapest Hotel, by Wes Anderson and Hugo Guinness. And Nightcrawler, by Dan Gilroy. Adam, who have you got and why?
Birdman.
Okay.
I've got a feeling, again, very similar to my reasons for Imitation Game. Not the war hero stuff. Think dreadfully about his sexuality. But very much runner-up prize. Birdman's not going to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
I think it's going to go on and take some of this minor category here. But I think it's going to largely be looked overall. But, again, I think there's a great dialogue in there. Some fantastic exchanges between Keaton and Emma Stone and Keaton and Norton and Stone.
Yeah.
So I just think it's going to get the nod there. The only thing that I could see potentially holding it back is the fact that it's more than one writer.
Okay. Interesting. We shall find out on February 22nd. Mark?
I've gone for the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
I just got this feeling that they need to give Wes Anderson some kind of pat on the back, and that's the sort of, like you said, he's not going to win the best film, in my opinion. Yeah. Grand Budapest Hotel.
I too have gone for Grand Budapest Hotel. I haven't seen the film yet. I intend to watch it prior to the Oscars, but it has been doing great business in all these sort of pre-show awards. I think it is now the front runner based on the fact it's picking up all the other industry awards. So for me, Best Original Screenplay, I'm picking Grand Budapest Hotel. So let's move on then to Best Supporting Actress. We have Patricia Arquette in Boyhood, Laura Dern in Wild, Keira Knightley in The Imitation Game, Emma Stone in Birdman, and Meryl Streep in Into the Woods. Adam, who have you got and why?
Patricia Arquette. Standard reasons, really. I think, again, like you just mentioned about Budapest Hotel sweeping up most of the other categories.
Yeah.
So other award ceremonies. Arquette's been doing very similar business. She seems to be the front runner for it. And to be honest, in a competition, it'd be stupid to go for anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
I agree. I watched Boyhood. I did actually feel that she deserves it, so it's not one of those awards where I'm just giving it to the, in my wholeheartedly. I believe that she was the best supporting actress. I did slightly think it might be Keira Knightley in a little kind of way, but no, I'm sticking where I originally thought.
I didn't mean for mine to sound like I didn't think she should win it, because she should.
Okay.
But yeah.
Again, I mean, I'm going with the same pick. I'm going Patricia Arquette. Again, I haven't seen it. I do intend to watch it prior to the Oscars. But again, as you mentioned, Adam, she's sweeping up all the other awards. I think it's hers to lose now. She's got to the point where I think she is the prohibitive front runner now, like some others are that we'll get to in a moment. And in fact, we might be getting to one now. Best Supporting Actor. Nominees are Robert Duvall for The Judge, Ethan Hawke, Boyhood, Edward Norton, Birdman, Mark Ruffalo, Foxcatcher, and J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. Adam?
J.K. Simmons. this one's clear as day.
Yeah.
I don't even need to justify this one. J.K. Simmons, Whiplash.
Can we just skip this? We all know it's going to be J.K., agree?
Yes, it's J.K. Next. Of course it is. Moving on then to Best Actress. So your nominees are Marion Cotillard for 2 Days, 1 Night, Felicity Jones for The Theory of Everything, Julianne Moore, Still Alice, Rosamund Pike, Gone Girl, and Reese Witherspoon, Wild. Adam, who you got on why?
I've gone Julianne Moore. Yeah. Again, front runner, sweeping up most of the awards so far. As much as I like the other performances in this category, I think Rosamund Pike's great.
Yeah.
I'm hearing great things about Reese Witherspoon. I haven't managed to see Wild yet. But she's just the front runner, Julianne Moore. Still Alice. I mean, everyone's been raving. People have been raving about this 6 months.
Yeah. Mark, surprise us.
I'm going to ruin this. Yeah, she won the BAFTA and she's going to win the Oscar. I do believe that Rosalind Pike should deserve Best Ass of All Time Outstanding Achievement Award.
Rosalind Pike.
Rosalind.
Yeah. Never heard of her.
It's her sister. She was on set holding the mic. No.
Who?
No.
Who should win it?
I'm not doing it. Your choice.
Yeah, of course, I've gone with the same. It's Julianne Moore. None of us have seen Still Alice yet, because it's not out in the UK yet, but I'm sure we will see it when it comes out. She's going to win it.
We're still to see that.
Yeah.
I think I've been checking the odds for the Oscars.
Brilliant, Mark. Weak. That is weak, weak humour.
I've been checking the odds for the Oscars, and Simmons and Moore are the two ones that are just far out ahead.
They're playing out already.
They are, yeah. They're odds-on favourites now. Okay, then, Best Actor. Steve Carell, Foxcatcher. Bradley Cooper, American Sniper. Benedict Cumberbatch, The Imitation Game. Michael Keaton, Birdman. Or Eddie Redmayne, The Theory of Everything. Adam.
I would love to give this to Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
But Redmayne. I think Keaton's probably the closest to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think Redmayne's got it down. He's been kind of taking a lot of the awards up until now.
He has.
And the performance he puts in is superb.
Yeah. Mark.
Everything you said.
Yeah, you've gone Redmayne.
He's got to. He's not going to lose it.
I too have gone for Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything. My little brother, who will be 10 this week, saw this film with my mum the other day, and he gave me his review yesterday. His review was, it's really good. He was quite clumsy anyway, and then he started falling over.
Can we get him on the episode?
Can we get him on? Yeah. So he loved it. So yeah, Redmayne for me as well.
So at the moment, it's looking like. Have me and you, Ben, got exactly the same?
I think we have.
Great.
So I might just change my pick. If we get to the last one and we're the same, I might just change my pick just to spice it up.
We need to.
So, okay, the next one then is Best Director. So your nominees are Wes Anderson, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Alejandro González Iñárritu, Birdman, Richard Linklater, Boyhood, Bennett Miller, Foxcatcher, or Martin Tilden, The Imitation Game. Adam.
I wonder if we're all going to have the same one here as well. Richard Linklater, for Boyhood. I just think the amount of time he spent developing this film.
Yeah.
Going there, filming for, is it a month of his life? For 10 years or something like that.
12 years.
I think you can't put that time in and not be recognised by the Academy. I think they're going to know that. They're going to hand in this. I think they've already got his name on it.
Yeah.
And they're just going
already engraved.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yeah. Luckily, I've seen the film, so I can actually say that there's no other director that deserves it. The time he spent... It doesn't matter if you spend 12 years on film. You could spend 12 years and make Tusk, and it'd still be shit. And, you could, you know, it doesn't matter.
You can read Mark's review of that, Tusk.
Oh, yeah. Please do. It's delightful.
He's won it. He's won it.
Yeah.
Well done. Congratulations.
You just want to skip to the end Academy Award.
I've got him now as well. To be honest, I was torn between him and González Iñárritu, but I've gone with Linklater. González Iñárritu has just won the Producers Guild or Directors Guild Award or something. Basically, it's the one that suggests you're going to win the Oscar, but I don't think he will. I think Linklater's going to win it. So let's finish off then with Best Picture. The nominees are American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. Adam, what have you got?
American Sniper. No, of course I'm not. I've gone with Boyhood.
Okay.
It's going to be Boyhood. Boyhood is the one that, again, this is probably one of the closest categories because people are still talking about Birdman for this. But I just think Boyhood's going to take it.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, Boyhood, 100%. There's no film that's going to touch it. It's I don't know, actually, now I've said this, I can see us all being looking like idiots when something like The Theory of Everything clears up, but no, Boyhood.
Well, delightfully then, I don't have to change my pick because I have gone with Birdman.
Nice.
I think it's a very tight race between the two. The reason why I think Birdman's going to pip it is because Hollywood actors love giving awards to films about actors. They go, oh, look, that's us. Look, they're making a film about our craft, about what we do. So I think it'll be too hard for them to resist giving the big gong to Birdman.
Yeah, that's I think that's a good reasoning as well.
That's good then. So there's definitely going to be a clear winner here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking forward to winning again.
I get the feeling we're going to come last.
Again. Shame. So, yes, the Oscars are on February the 22nd. Our next episode after this will come out February the 29th. So we will discuss everything that happened and let you know who won the competition.
And the loser won't actually appear on this podcast again.
You're sacked.
Yeah, that's it. Brilliant. So, guys, it was my turn to pick the rewatch, and it was obviously the 1994 classic. I hope it's still classed as a classic. We'll find out when you both tell us what you thought. The Crow, starring Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you, that was it. So, I'm not going to really throw it just out there. This is the reason I picked this film is 20 years since it came out. I haven't watched it for about 10 years. I remember everyone at kind of my college days being obsessed with this film. People were painting their faces up, growing their hair dark, going for that gothic look, wearing trench coats.
So what people were you hanging out with?
Come to a place called Ludlow and you'll find out.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, don't. It's worse than Nuneaton.
Can't be.
But yeah, it's been a long time. I think it was one of the first DVDs I ever bought, so it shows how long ago it was. For me, it's a very, very, very original film that came out of nowhere. It was kind of one of those first sort of comic book adaptations, whichever. That's Mark's weekly mess up. One of. Guys, tell me, did you enjoy it? Was it nice to revisit The Crow?
Hell yeah, it was. I too have a very similar experience. You know, when I was a student or a teenager, I used to watch the hell out of this film. I had it on VHS, I think I mentioned this last week, and it was one of those films that I used to watch weekly. I was never a goth or anything like that, but the gothic element of the film really appealed to me. It was a very cool film, loved it, haven't seen it in about 10 years, and it all came flooding back how much I loved it and why. Great film.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I've only ever seen it once before, so it was really interesting for me to watch it again, because I didn't watch it as a teenager or a kid. I watched it probably about 3 years ago for the first time. And I didn't really pay much attention to it when I first watched it, because I think it was an ex-girlfriend that actually made me watch it. But I didn't realise until I rewatched it that Brandon Lee died during that that shootout scene.
Yeah.
And knowing that, because I read up on it before I rewatched it, it was really weird to go back and watch it knowing that.
Yeah.
But it was really nice to see Sting before he was in wrestling.
Yeah. And also Heath Ledger. That was the Joker, I'm telling you. Just a different face, paint.
But, it's a really cool film. And I regret not kind of watching it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was really cool to watch again. Like I said, I've only seen it one time before. So my experience of it is going to be different to your experience. So you guys are going back and watching a classic film that you've seen millions and millions of times or whatever. Whereas I'd only seen it once before, so to watch it again, and I kind of see your point about the gothic element of it as well, because the gothic element adds a lot to it as a film.
Yeah, atmospherically, yeah.
Yeah, it's even just the shots in the church. And things like that, they're really cool shots.
Yeah.
And who's the director of this?
Alex Proyas.
And I mean, I'm a bit of a novice when it comes to him. Has he done anything else that was...
I think he directed I, Robot.
So, and nothing good then.
The last good film we've watched this.
But I was really impressed with some of the shots he was using. And I guess looking at it from an analytical point of view, now we do this podcast, I never used to look at a film like that, if I'm completely honest with you. I was just more impressed by watching it a second time round than I did the first time.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Sorry, I was going to say, he actually wanted to shoot this whole film in black and white, and then with Draven's back shots, that would have been in colour. And I know now we all go, oh, that's just like Sin City and stuff, but this was 20 years ago, before Sin City was around, before any of these superhero films were out, any of these kind of comic films. And I think a lot of people forget that this, you can look at Iron Man, you can look at, you know, all these modern day superhero films and comic book films, but this was one of the first.
Yeah.
And it worked so well, and it was original. So when you're seeing the crow flying through the city, and there's kind of, it looks like a comic, it's shot like a comic, there's a bit of special effects to make it, and you probably look at it now and think that looks dated, but it was way ahead of its time. It looked unbelievable. Some of those shots were, and the cinematography, everything about it is, I think he's stuck, basically set the bar pretty high to make a decent comic book film.
It really did, especially those sort of dark gothic films. You know, one of the films that it gets compared to is the Tim Burton Batman films.
Yeah.
And you can see that it has that same sort of dark sensibility. I wanted to go back to a point that Adam made about how you watch the film through the lens of knowing that he died making the film. And it's tricky, because if this was some light, happy, fluffy comedy, you think, oh, he died making it, shame, at least he was having a good time. But it's a film about a guy who is murdered, comes back to life through this magical crow, and then seeks revenge on the people who killed him and raped and murdered his wife, or his missus. So the fact that this is a very morbid film as it is, and you know that he died making it, it just adds a little extra something to it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I just want to go back to something Mark said just a second there as well. I don't think this looked dated.
There was at the very start, there are some scenes of buildings on fire, and the fire effects are really, they're clearly not very good. But other than that, no, I agree, I don't think it looks dated.
Some of the shots in the streets, and I thought it's very kind of strange when you see him coming in through the windows, and there's a scene where, I can't remember the name of the kid, but her mother is kind of with one of the guys that was responsible for the death of his wife, and there's some fantastic scenes of him getting revenge there. But generally, I just thought the film was, one, fantastically gothic, but then that kind of added to the morbid aspects of knowing that Brandon Lee died making the film.
Yeah. They actually were shooting when that, not literally, they were filming the scene as it happened, and they had to keep that footage when it went to court to use as evidence. So unfortunately, as morbid as it sounds, it's destroyed now. They would have had to have seen that played and played and played again, because it did actually change the way that they use guns in films, and there was extra protection brought in, and they used different different, I don't know what the things are, but I heard that it,
one of the things is angles. Before, because they use blank firing guns, sometimes they put different type of bullets in them or whatever it might be to make different sounds or have large flashes or whatever. And the whole thing that happened with him is it had a certain type of bullet in that shouldn't have been in there for the type of shot they did. It should have just been a blank. But there was a casing stuck in the gun or something, and it got pushed over and it killed him. So now one of the rules they've brought in is that you can't aim a gun directly at someone. You have to aim off to the side. So now they just use creative camera angles to make it look as though you're pointing at that person.
Fair play. It's a shame it took a death to do that. But
and Michael Massey, the actor who played Fun Boy, who actually fired the lethal shot, says that he still has nightmares about it.
Yeah, he took a whole year off, didn't he, after filming, just to try and get his head around what he'd done. To change the topic, well, to change the theme, because we're getting a bit
morbid,
depressed here, what was shocking is, on the DVD, there's some extras, and there's an interview with James O'Barr, and he said that when they originally went to make this film, he met with the movie executives and had a big sit-down, and it was actually going to be a musical, this is the truth, starring Michael Jackson. This is the idea behind it. He was literally laughed at them, and he says this, you know, it's from his, he actually says this. He laughed it off, and they only started taking it seriously again when Brandon Lee came on board. So we could have been sat here talking about the DVD of the musical featuring Michael Jackson.
Yeah. I don't think we would have been.
And James O'Barr, who you mentioned there, was the writer of the original comics. And the comics are very, very in line. I don't know, Adam, you're a comic guy. I don't know if you've ever read the original Crow comics.
I've not actually. It's always been one of those ones that you need to visit.
Yeah, you can get hold of them. You can get the books in good comic stores. They're from, I think, 1989, the original comics, and they're really good, and they're dark, and they're gothic. And it's a good representation of the film version. But yeah, Michael Jackson singing, that ain't the Crow.
No.
Would it have been like Thriller?
there was a film, a Michael Jackson musical film. I think it might have been called Moonwalk.
I don't know. I just remember
that I had like a Commodore 64 game version of it, and it was just
on the Mega Drive. You push A and he goes, ow! And he grabs his crotch.
Yeah.
And do you know what he has to do? Save kids, and kids are running around, and you keep hitting A, ow, ow, keeps grabbing his crotch, spinning around.
And that's what the Crow would have been, but with makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Imagine that.
Wow.
Well, they just filmed it at one point in his life, then instead of putting white makeup on, it's just another point of his life.
Yeah. The actual makeup was, they said that Brandon Lee was really kind of the Joker syndrome. He really got into this part, and I know we've talked before about how Jared Leto used to do his own makeup and come on set for Dallas Buyers, and Brandon Lee was actually really unhappy with the way he looked, and it got to the point where he sat with the director and agreed that he would take full control. He didn't want to be in makeup for 3 hours because he just said it looked a bit too well done. They said that he did his makeup before he went to bed every night while he was filming, would go to bed, wake up the next day with his makeup still on from the night before, and walk to set.
Yeah.
And that's how it kind of looks. And let's be honest about it, he looks unbelievable in that film. It looks incredible. And he does, like you said, incredible. No, it does. And that's one of the things you really notice is his performance. And that's not because he's dead and everyone goes, oh, it's because he's, you know, unbelievable performance.
I think that something like that makes it as well, because in a film like that, if the makeup is too well done, it's going to take away.
Yeah.
Because this is the story is the guy that's come back to his home, he's put it on himself. So to have a professional team sit there for 4 hours putting the makeup on, it's not going to work as well.
We've actually got Sarah from Boots to come on the podcast next week and talk about applying makeup. So that should be really good.
Well, we are doing 50 Shades of Grey as well.
Yeah, might as well get your nails done. The great shame of it for me in this film is the fact that Brandon Lee died. Now, that's a great shame for his family, of course, but for movie fans, he does something really special in this film. I think he's so good in this film, and it was his breakthrough role, and it came after he was dead, you know. And it's a shame. There are some great scenes. Like, there's one scene when, Adam, you referred to Dolla, the mother of the young girl, and she's with Funboy in their bedroom, and he goes in to try and get his revenge on Funboy, and Funboy shoots him through the hand. And it's just a brilliant scene, the way he plays getting shot through the hand, pretending like he's hurt, but then you see the smirk come on his face as the wound heals and stuff. It's a great, great performance, full of pathos. Like, you know, it's a fun, over-the-top performance, but also really deep, and you feel his pain, you know, the loss for his wife.
Yeah, definitely.
Great film.
It's really depressing, isn't it? Because you just think, what would he have done after that? Because, you know, I'm not comparing it again to Heath Ledger, because Heath Ledger had a good CV up to then. What would Brandon Lee done? He would have been the biggest name in Hollywood. Everyone would have wanted him to be on this film, that film, and we'll never know. And
could you imagine him as the Joker?
Yeah.
I could have.
Yeah.
It'd be a bit too similar, I think. It'd be typecasting. I could imagine him doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, the scary thing is, and if you are listening to this, never, ever go and see... I don't even want to talk about them, but the sequels, because... I did watch the second one, and there's about 8 of them now.
Yeah.
I think most of them are straight to the Sci-Fi Channel or something like that. And they're literally like The Crow, 8, The Raven Attacks, and it's just, they are
different
absolutely
bird.
Abysmal.
They're
yeah.
like what bird
yeah.
is supposed to be.
Absolutely abysmal.
Soon there'll be The Crow versus Birdman.
That'd be
I'll good. Look forward to that. Good. But yeah, Crow 2, I think it's... is it Crow 2? Is that City of Angels?
Yeah.
That is shite. With the exception of the fact that Deftones performed live at the Day of the Dead Festival in the film. That's
good.
One good thing in it.
Ah, I forgot to say this as well. The soundtrack to The Crow. So we had
awesome.
The Cure, we had Pantera, a lot of the rock bands that we
very,
love.
Very cool soundtrack.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. And that Cure song was a song they wrote specifically for the film.
Yeah.
And apparently, by all accounts, it brought The Cure a lot of new fans. People who, you know, Cure were sort of on the outs at that point. Mm. This new song, people loved this film, got into that song, and apparently they've only played it once in 20 years. And people say to them now, can you play that song? And they say, oh, is that the one we did for the soundtrack? We don't remember it. Even though it brought a whole new legion of fans.
Wow.
Yeah. That is not the one that won the MTV MTV Movie Award for Best Song, though. That was some Stone Temple Pilots bullshit, apparently.
Which you can hear on this episode.
Nice!
So, I think we should talk about a rating because, you know, I don't think we've summed up this film, we've summed up the story, we've summed up the fantastic performance from, obviously, Bruce Lee's son.
We didn't mention that Winston from Ghostbusters is in it, though, as the cop.
God, yeah.
Yeah. He's pretty good in it as well.
Ratings. I'm not going to go first.
I'll go first. I'm quite happy to go first on this. I've got a bit of a different view, I guess. It's only the second time I've ever seen this film. It's very much a rewatch for me.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy to throw an 8 in there. I think it's a damn good film. There are some damn good scenes, some damn good shots, and a fantastically gothic-looking atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, 8.
Ditto. It's an 8 for me. It's been an 8 since the first time I saw it until the last. It's a damn, damn good film. Love it. Happy to watch it again.
Yep, I totally agree. 8 out of 10. Wow, we all agree. And probably one of the strongest rewatches so far. If I just must say so myself.
Fantastic.
Yeah. On that note, is it?
Is that a rewatch?
Adam, yeah.
So, I sat down quite a lot and I thought about this because I disappointed you guys very much last time I chose a rewatch for The Phantom Menace. Let's not make any bones about it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it though.
Ben hated me for about a month.
Yeah, I still do.
He's hated you for years.
So I'm hoping that this can go some way to building bridges again.
Yeah.
My rewatch, and there's been a severe lack of Arnie.
Okay.
So far on this podcast.
Better not be twins because you're in it.
Predator.
Yeah.
Nice.
Uncut as well. Yeah. We're not watching that cut to crap.
We get to see Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
Or Apollo Creed, as he's well known.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse the Body Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, awesome.
So next week,
Predator.
Excellent choice.
Boys.
Hello.
Question time.
Nice.
So if you want to basically contribute to our episode, we will answer every single question that comes through on Twitter, which is @STTEPodcast.
That is not a guarantee. We won't necessarily answer every question that comes through. We'll try, though.
They're good.
I must admit, Ben, not sure about you, but this is one of my favourite parts of the podcast.
Hell yeah.
If you want to go on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, you can also leave it on our wall. You can email us, skiptotheend@icloud.com, or you can go on skiptotheend.co.uk, and just on the right, there's a little form where you can basically contact us. You put in your question, hit your email address and name, done. That easy. Made it that easy for you to submit a question. If you see us in the street, stop us, ask us a question.
Don't.
I don't do autographs.
No.
Yes.
So, first of all, we have had Peter Zeke come through, who's on Twitter.
Not a real name.
What podcasts do you guys listen to?
I listen to WTF Podcast by Mark Maron. If you guys don't know, he is a really good American stand-up comedian. He basically was a drug addict and a complete dropout in the 90s and early 2000s. He then saw friends of his who were other stand-up comedians have runaway success, like Louis C.K., who's the most famous popular comedian in America, and he was just really bitter about this. And then one day he decided, right, I'm going to start a podcast so I can talk to some of my old friends and work through some of this. So it's a really funny podcast of him interviewing other comedians, but it's also really deep, sort of psychological, getting into people's issues, how they got into it, what the sort of shit they've been through. And over the 4 or 5 years or something he's been doing it, you've seen the man grow from sort of a bitter arsehole into one of the most beloved comedians on earth.
Lovely.
Check out WTF Podcast, cool. Mark Maron, awesome.
I listen to Chris Jericho, so the wrestler. He has a weekly podcast where he gets loads of musicians on, he gets famous other wrestlers, but he also will go and get, you know, the singer from Kiss or something like this, and he'll talk all about their life stories, and he's a fascinating guy to listen to. I also listen to The Nerdist. He also kind of talks to celebrities about movies and films, and he gets some really big stars on there. And I also do try and find the time to listen to Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I don't really listen to any movie ones, which
just
I should.
Wrestling, mainly.
But yeah, and check those guys out.
Well, I already do the best movie podcast out there.
True story.
Just listen to yourself.
So I listen to Skip to the End.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listen to Jericho, like Mark as well, the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. And on occasion, if I find the time, the Ross Report, which is Jim Ross's podcast. It's not just about wrestling. Obviously, Jericho, as Mark said, gets a lot of musicians on there. He gets writers on there, directors on there. So it is quite cool to listen to Jericho.
Awesome.
Sarah Jenkins has come through on Facebook. Now, it's quite a long question because you don't answer it straight away. So it's the movie you'll never watch again. So you might have Matrix Revolutions. No, it's the movie you won't watch again because you can't. Because it's horrible. You just don't want to go and see it again. You just don't want to put yourself through that. It doesn't even have to be horrible. It could be an upsetting film. It could be a film that you just... You don't really feel any need to ever sit yourself in front of a TV for that time.
Okay. I'll lead off with this. 12 Years a Slave. I did actually like the film. I thought it was quite good. But I'll never have any intention to see it again.
Yeah. I think for me, I would go with The Human Centipede. It's a film that I liked watching it at the time. I thought it was good fun. But it's one of those things where... The shock has worn off after one viewing.
Yeah.
There is no reason for me to ever sit through that film again.
For me, it's going to be Marley and Me.
is that the film about a dog?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I am happy to say this in front of 30,000 listeners. I cried like a bitch. It's nice. About... I saw the trailer. It was Owen Wilson. It was Jennifer Aniston. I thought, this is great. It's sort of the same time as Meet the Parents. I thought it was going to be a really good comedy. Just an easy no-brainer. I cried like a bitch. That film, if you have ever owned a dog, or you own a dog, nah, don't do it to yourself.
I never have any interest in seeing, full stop, Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2.
No, me neither. Won't see it once. But also, the fact that you have these deep feelings for Marley and Me, it makes me think that you don't love Beverly Hills Chihuahua as much as I thought you did. I thought that would be your top dog.
Well, no, I didn't love it, because Beverly Hills, as we know, is the better sequel, Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2.
Yeah.
And that's the one that exceeds it.
Gotcha.
That's fair.
Steve Jordan, I think we've covered this before, but let's revisit it in case we've, you know, got Alzheimer's and changed. First ever cinema experience. We have discussed this, but I can't remember what we all said.
Yeah, I think we discussed it on podcast one.
Wow.
And I think my response was that I didn't remember what the first one was, but I don't know what the first one was, but the first one I remember is going to see Willow, my cousin Wayne, who shit himself.
Yeah.
Oh shit, I've used his name!
And I'm not editing that out. No,
you've
got to
delete that.
No. Sorry, dude. It could be any person called Will.
That's not what I said, but that's what I was going to say. You said Wayne.
Oh.
Brilliant, brilliant.
I just want to help you out there.
Bleep that out as well.
It's like witness protection, isn't it? I can't say it.
Yeah, I think mine was Aladdin at the time. I think it's, yeah, Aladdin.
Yeah. Who framed Roger Rabbit was the first cinema experience that I can remember.
Who's Robert Rabbit? Is that his cousin?
No, my mum and dad got a VCD and we watched it. Paul from Headshot Clothing. A great company.
Look at those guys.
Really cool t-shirts. Actually, look guys, I'm wearing one now.
Yep, he is.
Yeah, and if you didn't believe me, I'll put it on our Instagram, which is Skip the Un Podcast.
Nicely done.
He has said, and this is quite aimed at you because you're the gamer, thoughts on the announcement this week about the Zelda TV series coming to Netflix. What direction would you like to see? Let's all answer this.
I think I actually texted someone about this. I'm not sure if it was you, Ben, but I did message someone when I heard it. Oh, no, it was one of my friends, yeah.
Cool, the listeners really care about that.
Well, there's your answer. And I texted my friends about it when it was announced, and I said the direction I want them to go in, which probably won't be the direction they go in, is to have a series per Zelda game. So to do 12 episodes on Ocarina,
yeah,
and then 12 on Majora's Mask.
We chatted about this at the weekend at the football, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
And I was saying I would love to see Majora's Mask, because that is some trippy-ass shit.
So if they did a series per game, I think that could end up being really cool.
What about you, Ben?
I have said all I need to say.
Is that what you want to say?
Majora's Mask. Get involved.
What was the Zelda game on the GameCube? I had a silver GameCube and it came
Wind
with
Waker.
It. I just want to see an animated version of that, the way it was told, the way it was shot. It looked beautiful, really colourful, a bit childish, but ridiculous. Right. People moan, but that was great. You had that little flute. Amazing. Yeah. Well, no, but...
Didn't have a flute.
It had some little thing that you played.
That's Ocarina of Time.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, but a mix between them two then. He had something he played, his penis. Oh, nice question. Stu Pickering, what memorabilia would you like to own if you could own any piece of film memorabilia?
Very cool question, very cool.
Do you want me to answer mine while you go?
Yeah,
there you go.
I want, and if anyone's listening, send it to me, the actual Zoltar machine from Big. So
nice.
I want that in my lounge. I'd have to ask my missus if it's all. Come on in, watch the machine.
Yeah.
But I want that exact one that gives out the, you know, the actual proper tickets. Mm. Not one of these ones that you get now at a fairground that, you know, is a bit of a spoof. I want the one.
Don't you have a picture of yourself next to it? Or was that one of the crap ones? Was that not the
that
real one?
That was a spoof one right. in Brighton. But yeah, okay. I want the real one, if it's still available.
Okay.
I've got a couple, to be honest, if I can cheat. One, I want the actual DeLorean.
Yeah.
From Back to the Future.
Fair.
That would be unreal. With a flux capacitor.
Yeah, that's
a
time travel and everything.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Why would I want it else? Get a bus?
Nice.
The other thing I would want, genuinely, is one of the original 1977 lightsabers from Star Wars A New Hope.
Yep.
That would be unreal.
Well, if he's had two, I'm going to choose two as well. Heath Ledger's suit from The Dark Knight.
I think Creed's got that, haven't he? Office reference.
That would be awesome to own. And Star-Lord's Walkman.
Nice.
Cool. I want another one now.
Essentially, I can get one of them tailor-made, and I can buy one from a charity shop.
Yeah. Do it. It's Halloween sorted. Mark, go on, have another one then. We've had two.
I would like... I want the actual original mask from the Halloween films.
Nice, yeah.
The original one. You can still use ones on eBay that look like it, but to have the actual one it was in John Carpenter's film. Imagine that on your wall.
That'd be cool.
I wonder where that is now. I bet that's in some sort of museum or something.
Yeah.
Or the mask from the mask.
That'd be dreadful. Because it's all bloody face paint, isn't it, most of it?
So, no, I mean...
That hard
wooden one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Sandman's t-shirt.
Mike Lee on Facebook... This is just a kind of yes or no. Should the person who originally thought that these big films now that come out should be split into two, should he be shot?
Yes.
I think capital punishment's a bit far, but yes.
Okay, fair enough. On Twitter, at The Irish on Fire, whose actual real name is Christopher.
Cool.
Now, this is a really good question. What comic book movie do you think will be the... Basically, the one that bursts the bubble for this. So, the inevitable ends the... Oh my god, this is a great comic book movie.
Howard the Duck.
And why?
Because it's got Howard the Duck in.
Is that coming out? Are they redoing that now?
I don't know, I can see it happening. Well, he appears in Guardians of the Galaxy. Spoiler alert, I've said it.
Well, this one's really difficult. I mean, Captain America Civil War could be the one.
Nah.
I can't imagine that. I think that's going to be unreal.
I think right now...
But what by buying it, I mean, I think that could be the... This is so good, you're never going to beat it.
Oh, I see. Right. So you're talking about a high watermark rather than a film that's just so bad.
No, he wants to know what's the one that is...
What's going to be the worst?
What's their Sandman? I'm going to go with...
Another Spider-Man?
I'm going to go with... I'm going to say it now. I'm going to look a dickhead, but Ant-Man. I just have a feeling it's going to not deliver and it's going to be very mediocre.
You could be right. For me, I don't think there's going to be... a bubble-bursting film. I just think fatigue is going to set in.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the point where we're going to see a new superhero film every 2 weeks, and you think, that's enough's enough. I just want to see Inherent Vice. Maybe not.
Depending on the quality of them as well, we could actually end up seeing the Marvel's Infinity War series end, and then that's it done. Because no storylines ever going to build to that again. Or if Justice League does it correctly.
What's the Superman film?
That's
going to be the one.
Wonder Woman's going to be shit, I think. But maybe I'm just sexist. I
don't know. So woman's got power. That's why you won't play Tomb Raider games.
I play Tomb Raider games a lot.
He pauses it.
As a youth.
Tomb Raider.
During puberty.
One more question, boys?
Yeah, go on.
You might not agree, but I want to bring this back next week. The answer.
Okay.
Gemma Hurst. She's contributed a lot, but she's never asked a question.
And Gemma's got a new blog up, hasn't she, talking about movie reviews?
Popcorn Hearts, yep. Google that. She's basically plagiarising us and ripping us off, trying to do us what we do.
Shame.
But we'll let it go.
Shouldn't
have to.
So basically, Gemma has said, this is good, the greatest singular scene ever in a film.
Christ.
So I think we need to take this away, because okay. I can see you both saying it now. Basic Instinct. Seeing that camel toe, but no, that's degrading.
I think I can answer this now.
No, I want you to take it away. Actually, say it now. Your initial,
and then think about it,
and come back and make up for the Sandman.
Introduction of Hans Lander in Inglourious Basterds.
Shit.
in the single most, in the history of cinema, that's the scene that is the best forever for you.
Do you know what? It sounds like a cop-out, but I think you've nailed it. Let's have a couple of weeks and we'll think about it and see if we change our minds. But at the minute, I think we've discussed it on the podcast before, when I saw that in the cinema, I've never heard so many sort of audible gasps and people physically on the edge of their seats. It's a phenomenal scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll come back
and we'll give it. We'll do round two on that and we'll see if our opinions have changed. What about you, Mark? Have you got an idea?
Right now, probably The Thing, when we actually see The Thing and the dog's all mangled up. And that's horrendous.
What about the first time you see the walrus in Tusk?
Or, do you know what I really like? In Poltergeist, when the girl's in the telly, that's pretty good. But let me think about this, because
I don't think I'm going to change from Christopher Waltz or Inglourious Basterds.
I want you to. That's your challenge.
Okay.
Keep your questions coming in. We'll answer as many of them as we can. These guys won't answer every single one. Can you tell me where Tesco is? Okay, none of them. But yeah, keep them coming. Facebook, skipthend.co.uk. That's basically got links to Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, email, and articles daily. We are providing articles literally on films, TV, games, and every single day we write an article. So come and have a read. If you like it, share it. Leave us feedback. Done. That's all of them.
That brings us to the end of episode 14 of the Skip to the End podcast. Next time round, we're going to be reviewing 50 Shades of Grey, God help us. We're also going to be re-watching The Predator, so something a bit more manly. And we're also going to be discussing the worst films of all time that are based on video games. So, we'll see you then.